At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, your host. Artificial intelligence, or AI, what is it, and how in particular can we as Christians think about this increasingly important technology? To talk further about this issue and to help us to think biblically about artificial intelligence is Jason Thacker, a professor at Boyce College in Louisville. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Look forward to it.
So AI, this is something that I hate to be transparent and confess over the airwaves, but I've been fairly ignorant of this topic. I have tried to educate myself on it in the last few months, and I need to be really transparent. I actually got ChatGPT recently, and I've been fiddling around and playing with it. And I use ChatGPT to help come up with some questions for you. I want to give the floor to you, man. Tell us let's start out with a definition of what is artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I think that's a really great place to start, because often when we hear, especially up to the last few years, when most people would hear about artificial intelligence, we think of kind of this far off futuristic reality, robots, and a lot of the sci-fi movie plots. And sometimes that was met with a lot of optimism and looking forward. But if you know anything about sci-fi plots and these movies, they often are very dystopian in many ways. They're not very happy futures where the robots seem to take over. And so that's often where our minds went when we thought of artificial intelligence. We either kind of had a willful kind of ignorance of, I don't really care about this, it really doesn't intersect with my life, or we kind of had this dreading kind of fear. And some of us had this kind of unbridled optimism, looking forward to what was coming. And I think what's happened over the last 9 or 10 months or so, especially with the release of many popular products using generative artificial intelligence, we can talk about that as well. It simply put is that artificial intelligence is the ability of a machine to perform a human-like task, to exhibit some level of human-like intelligence, often mimicking or imitating that, doing things that were once reserved for humans. Now machines are able to do that. And so you have very rudimentary forms of artificial intelligence and algorithms, all the way up to some of the most advanced systems today that we see with generative AI, like ChatGPT and Bard and DALL-E and others, that are doing things that are kind of miraculous in many ways when we think about it, of writing text or drawing artwork. Or I was just the other day having it to recreate a scene between two kind of philosophers of the day. And it was a really interesting piece of artwork, an oil painting that the AI was creating itself. And it's original in some sense, because you can't duplicate it. And so it's really interesting the way that artificial intelligence has been kind of thrust into the mainstream conversation. But this isn't a place that Christians have to meet with just this kind of unbridled optimism or even this deep-seated fear. We engage these technologies from a place of hope, a place of eschatological hope rooted in the scriptures, and knowing that the scriptures, specifically the Christian ethic, is more than equipped to help us navigate any of the opportunities as well as the challenges before us. If we seek to think biblically about these technologies, what they are, how they're forming and shaping us, and then how do we respond in light of what God has done?
Thank you, Jason, for that definition. You distinguished AI from generative AI, or maybe that's a branch of AI. It sounds, based on your definition, AI is something that's been with us for some time. We've had robots and computers that have done human tasks and make it easier for us to do these tasks. Let's talk about generative AI. You mentioned DALL-E and ChatGPT, which, by the way, ChatGPT is an app that I put on my phone. And here's a question I asked to help me prepare for this. What are several concerns about AI? And it came up with six different areas here of concern, and it was fantastic. And actually, I've used this just to play around a little bit to prepare commentaries. Many of our listeners know that I do a daily radio commentary, and I put in parameters into ChatGPT, and it has come up with some amazing commentaries according to my parameters, and it sounds like me. which is kind of scary. Now, I've got two of my staff members here who write commentaries as well. So word of the wise, guys, this ChatGPT might take over your job, which is one of it's the very first concern that ChatGPT came up with as far as concerns about AI. It's job displacement. Speak to that in particular, this generative AI of ChatGPT, which can compose emails, and it can write essays, and it can write commentaries, like I just mentioned. How big of a concern should this be for job displacement?
Yeah, we're kind of in the midst of what's known as an AI hype cycle. So meaning basically wall-to-wall coverage across all media sources, everything's AI all the time, which in many ways can raise some very helpful concerns and also some dangers that we need to be aware of. The problem with that, though, is it can raise the kind of expectations of what is possible or what's right around the corner or what's already happening to what I think can be an unhealthy extent. Reality is that we've all been utilizing artificial intelligence every single day, whether we realize it or not. Artificial intelligence isn't even that new. It's actually a term that was coined in the 1950s. Throughout the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, we were kind of in what's known as an AI winter, where there wasn't a lot of development taking place, especially because of lack of computer power and data processing. And in the mid-90s, we saw kind of an explosion, early 2000s, these technologies really taking off, a lot of newer forms of artificial intelligence that are a little bit more refined and be able to produce a little bit more human-like interactions and tasks, especially in terms of creativity. And then we kind of work to the time where we have this generative AI. And generative AI, again, isn't even that new, but it's been popularized by companies like OpenAI with ChatGPT and others. And essentially what generative AI is it's a creative element in some sense. It's taking the ability to write, to draw, to create audio and video, and utilizing artificial intelligence to do so. So what was really interesting about kind of the job replacement or transition, kind of the effects on the humanity and kind of how we think about vocation over the last few years, is that many predicted that we have a massive kind of lot of automation that would take place on blue collar jobs. We think of assembly lines. We think of a lot of manual labor. Interestingly enough, and one of the things that I think has made a lot of people very fearful of artificial intelligence, especially in the last 9 or 10 months, it was long assumed that, quote, white collar, more intellectual jobs, intellectually engaging jobs wouldn't be able to be taken over because there's something unique about humanity in terms of creativity, intelligence, and reason and rationality. And I think that's true. But one of the things that fails, that understanding of what it means to be human fails to account for, is there's a lot more to humanity than just what we do. Something we talk about, especially in the Christian tradition, of the idea of being created in the image of God. And so when we saw this kind of revolution, especially with generative AI start to take over, a lot of people became very fearful. Whether you write for a living, you're like, well, man, these systems can outperform me. It's producing voluminous bits of text. Some of it really bad. Some of it halfway decent. Some of it maybe even very good. I've used it for research purposes myself. But if you kind of get into it, it's very rudimentary. It's very basic in many ways. It's becoming more and more advanced each day. And so that can drive a little bit of fear, especially about what type of jobs and how many jobs and what aspects of our jobs may or may not be automated. And one of the things that I encourage Christians as we think through these things, not only from an ethical perspective, but even a policy and kind of political perspective, is to make sure that we keep the idea of human dignity at this very center of our engagement with these technologies, because it's very interesting and almost ironic the way we treat these artificially intelligent machines. We humanize them. We seek to give them names and faces. We talk about, well, have they gained consciousness and awareness, all of these different aspects of, you know, what it traditionally meant to be human. At the same time, we treat ourselves as just merely machines, kind of organic machines. There's nothing unique or special about humanity. We're just an organic computer, many will say even. And so at the same time that we're humanizing these machines, we're also dehumanizing ourselves. And the antidote to that, I think, is rooted. It's the very foundation of the Christian ethic, remembering that we're image bearers of the Almighty God. Our value and worth and dignity, including our work and our purpose, isn't rooted in the things we do. Is rooted in who we are as image bearers, this status, then an alterable status that no matter how smart you are, creative you are, hardworking you are, that doesn't define your value and your dignity. It's defined in that dignity is defined and kind of refined in the very image of God, how God made us. And so keeping that aspect of human dignity center to all of these conversations about artificial intelligence, especially questions of jobs and vocations and kind of the future of work, I think is really key for Christians and employing a Christian ethic today.
Jason, that's really good. There's a lot there. I want to key in on one aspect of human dignity. Of course, we are image bearers, but we live in a Genesis 3 broken world. And part of our brokenness and fallen state is that we often do the wrong things. And I'm thinking of how AI might contribute to us choosing to do the wrong things. It reminds me of a conversation I had with one of the guys in my men's group. He's an English teacher at the high school level at a school not far from here. And we're talking about AI and how some of his kids are using it to write their term papers. He's warned them, he's talked to them about it, that they're going to get failing grade if they do that. And yet he still, I think, in this at the end of the semester, caught three kids using AI, and he's got a way to do that. There's certain things he's looking for. One of the ways, of course, is he's read other papers that they've done early in the year, and AI will churn out something that sounds nothing like them or nothing like what they would come up with. So on this particular question of honesty and integrity, what challenges are you seeing there regarding AI, even in the Christian community? Look, it's come up. I've heard the conversation that pastors can have sermons prepared for them through AI. So this brings some challenges that we've not had the opportunity to use this technology that can be used for good, but it can also dehumanize us, using your term, in certain ways, can't it?
It really can, and as you rightfully highlight, in a Genesis 3 world, sin is pervasive. It affects every single aspect of creation, including us, and also the tools that we use. One of the things that's very helpful to do in conversations, especially around artificial intelligence and other technologies, is to take a step back and to slow down. One of the kind of the pushes of modernity and postmodernity is this speed, efficiency, and convenience, making everything as fast and convenient and easy as possible. And there's some benefit to that. But one of the things that can happen, though, is this kind of the efficiency and speed is that we can gloss over some of the details and the depth. Technology feels like, especially with artificial intelligence, that we're asking a lot of new and novel questions, things we've never had to worry about or think about as humanity. And that's true to some extent. But really, at the core of these questions, we're really engaging the very same conversations, the very same questions that we've always asked as humanity of, essentially, what does it mean to be human? Is there a God? If so, what is he like? And how are we to live and to interact in this world? What is a sense of justice? What is a sense of honesty and transparency and love of one another specifically? A lot of these kind of core fundamental type of questions that have always perplexed philosophers and theologians in the church throughout its history. And so that's actually one of the interesting things about artificial intelligence and with technology is that we do have the ability to utilize these tools that are not neutral. I think one of the kind of misnomers, especially today, is that we essentially think that technology is neutral. It's just a tool that we use. And I think that's true in some ways, but it's also very limited in others because we have to know that these tools are also shaping and forming us. They have distinct values, not only in the sense of the technology and the tools themselves, but also in the people who are creating them. They have values. They have certain inherent design and purposes and what they want you to do and how they want you to utilize these tools. So naturally, as sinful people creating sinful tools are tools that are affected by sin, that is, and then also used by sinful people, naturally, we're going to use these things to abuse others, to exploit others, to manipulate, to pursue selfishness and prideful and arrogant means. And so that's something that we can start to think of is these technologies aren't just neutral. It's not just how you use them. It's also how they're using you, informing you and shaping you. We see this especially true in the conversation with social media. I think most of us realize that social media doesn't seem to be ushering in this kind of great kind of connectivity and culture and community online. We're starting to see division and tribalism and polarization kind of run rampant today. We seem to not be able to have conversations without kind of our blood starting to boil. We can't talk about religion and politics and different things like that. Technology is aiding that. It's not all of it. It's not the sole purpose or sole reason that those things happen, but it is one of the factors, contributing factors to a lot of the breakdown of social cohesion and the breakdown of conversation and neighborliness and community that we've seen today as we can break into these factions. Social media is part of that. And very similar, I think, with artificial intelligence, we're also going to see this kind of breaking down this idea that we're not focusing on community and especially on loving one another, as we see in Jesus's own words, to love God and to love our neighbors ourselves is the core of the Christian ethic. we're starting to see that technology is not a neutral tool, but it's actually something that's forming and shaping us in distinct and very important ways that we need to be aware of, lest we think we just kind of meet the symptoms and we're done with it. We really have to get back to the core issues, the core questions, and then seek to apply our faith in those areas as well.
Jason, that's really good, but I'd like to come back and ask further about what does it mean that technology is not a neutral tool, and then how can we as Christians address that? If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Jason Thacker, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for a perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky.
Welcome back to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, your host, here with Jason Thacker, and we are talking AI, artificial intelligence. And just before the break, Professor Thacker had said that technology is not a neutral tool. That reminded me of a professor back in the 1960s, Marshall McLuhan, who made the case, actually wrote a book called The Medium is the Message. And he was very critical of technology such as television. That was a technology that shaped the way we thought about ourselves and the world. You're making the case that technology is not neutral, along the lines of what McLuhan is saying. Look, if you are getting your information, for example, through television, it's going to be very different. It affects us in a different way than if we are reading. Our brain is working in a different way. The synapses connect in a different way through reading, which is difficult work to get these ideas, these images off the page, and to process them into thoughts in our mind, very different than an image-based transference of information. Now we're talking about AI, which, by the way, I think the best example, and tell me if I'm wrong, Jason, of a commonly used artificial intelligence is Google, doing a Google search, right? Where we type in something, we want to get information, and Google spits it out. And now we have ChatGPT where we can speak to it. You got the app on your phone and say, hey, write me a 200-page email on how to be better workers and responsible workers in the workplace, something like that. By the way, is that going to displace Google? Could ChatGPT displace Google, which is one of the biggest companies in the country?
In some ways it can. Interestingly enough, Google is also kind of on the AI bandwagon. Google has long been involved in the conversation surrounding AI and it even created its own version of a generative AI system that it's incorporating into search. Microsoft has done something very similar. Many companies, when we think of OpenAI, we think of ChatGPT. Many of us, that's kind of where our minds immediately go. But there are actually numerous forms of generative AI, from audio to video to text to art, to a host of different applications and also a host of different tools. And so one of the things that we think of, kind of going back to that question of about the neutrality of technology, I think most of us, especially that kind of spend any time in the public or social sphere, realize that nothing is actually truly neutral. This idea that we can have a neutral kind of secular space is just simply not true. All of us bring our gods, all of us bring our values, our deeply held beliefs into the public square. And very similar with technology is that nothing is truly neutral. We have to realize that for the history of the church, often we have thought of tools or technologies as inherently neutral. They're not good and they're not bad. They're just neutral. It's about the way you use them. It's not that social media is making me an angry person. I'm just an angry person utilizing social media as a tool to express those things. And there's some element of truth to that. But as you brought in Marshall McLuhan and others, even Neil Postman, especially in the turn of the 80s and early 90s, is talking about the rise of cable television, which I always find really fascinating because I think it'd be interesting to see and read Postman's thoughts on what's happening today, especially with social media and kind of how he may even roll over in his grave realizing kind of what was at stake. But in many ways, he was very prescient. He was very forward thinking about the way that technology was shaping us. He talked about with cable networks and cable television, it was really interesting. He would talk about the now this moment, so that a newscaster would spend maybe 20, maybe 30 seconds at most and say, and now this. So you go from one great crisis across the world to another great crisis, to a baking competition, to a local mayoral race. And the idea was, you've spent enough time thinking about that, let's move on to something else. Well, naturally, that devalues, we don't get context, we don't fully, truly understand, and we feel informed, but we really don't actually know what's going on. We don't have true knowledge and understanding. It's interesting enough, I almost long for the days of a 30-second attention span. Now that we have just in a few swipes of our thumb, we can go from one breaking news alert to another breaking news alert to a Doritos ad to something else to a cat picture on social media. Our attention span, we're running from one thing to another to another. And what that's doing is it's forming and shaping how we understand the nature of truth itself. We've seen a massive rise, especially in conspiracy theories, misinformation, disinformation. Those can feel very politically loaded, and I understand that. But reality is that we all live in what's known as a post-truth society, where we seek to form truth to our own understandings, our own desires, our own will. So it's something that I feel is true, must be true. Reality is that directly contradicts not only reality itself, but also Christian scriptures, is that truth is external to us. So we have to realize that whether it's from cable network and television to social media, to even artificially intelligent machines or ChatGPT and generative AI, that these technologies are not neutral, because they're forming and shaping us. They're shaping our perspective of God, ourselves as human beings, as well as the world around us. And that includes the very nature of truth.
Jason, that is really good. I notice my personal habits with social media. Years ago, when I got on Facebook, largely did it because of work, to connect better with people and to communicate what me and my organization were doing. But after a while, I started scrolling through the news feed, and it was fascinating. I was finding information about people or events that I wouldn't have known about if Facebook wasn't there. But then it dawned on me after doing this for some period of time that, man, I'm wasting a lot of time looking at a lot of useless information. To your point about our attention span, I also noticed that I was spending less time on something I might have read through and focused on a little better, to where after you get into the habit of doing that, I would just like look at headlines, maybe read the first couple sentences and then move on. And after any amount of time, I was taking in a lot of information, much of it really not helpful to me. But to your point again, my attention span was being reduced, and it was not healthy for me. I took a fast off of Facebook. Since technology is not neutral, but it's formative, it is shaping us, how we think of ourselves and the world and our relationship to God, what should Christians be doing to set up guardrails in their life, so it does not shape them in the wrong way, so that it does not shape their soul in a way that is less in the image of God?
Yeah, while I wish I could give kind of a five-step approach of, you know, here's five steps to kind of write your relationship with technology, unfortunately, we can't. And the problem is that technology is actually a lot more pervasive than that. It's a lot more complicated than that. And also, the goal here is not to just kind of have a right relationship with technology per se, is to actually cultivate wisdom and discernment. Wisdom is not something that's gained overnight. We know this, especially as you read the Proverbs and talks about the glory of gray hair. I'm starting to have a little gray in my beard and my hair, and I'm kind of looking forward to it in many ways. But the idea is that wisdom is gained over a long kind of time. This idea of cultivating virtue, it's not something that is a habit formed overnight or even very quickly, but that kind of habitual kind of pursuit of wisdom and discernment and virtue over time. It's interesting, even our bad habits with technology, it didn't form overnight either. You didn't immediately sign up for Facebook, and the next thing you know, you're knee deep in conspiracy theories and spending all of your time kind of on social media and specifically on Facebook and the weeds of things. It was something that happened over time that kind of built up to that. Very similar to yourself, I've actually taken kind of a fast in many ways from Twitter. Part of that is because I felt like I was always living with this kind of like low level anxiety, not only of the things I was missing, but we know the idea of what's going on right now. What am I missing? What's going on? What are people saying? What are people doing? And what's really interesting is that while Twitter is the real world, I hate when people say that it's not the real world, because it is reflective of the real world. But there's actually, interesting enough, so many of the controversies on Twitter that you give it a day or so and everybody's kind of moved on to something else. It actually wasn't as big of a deal that people thought it was initially. And so slowing down is actually one of the most, it kind of sounds very trite. I think many people are like, what do you mean slow down? The idea that we live in this efficient, convenient, kind of fast-paced environment, when we think about how to navigate that, what to do about it, is actually to slow down. That's actually one of the beauties of Christian worship. The beauty of the church itself is that it causes us to come out of our context, out of these kind of me-centered environments with my feed, my post, my everything, me, me, me. It takes us into an environment, the embodiment of Christ himself, coming together in our differences with all of our warts and stains and our sins to worship the living God, to come out of that and to think differently, to kind of reorient ourselves. And that's one of the blessings of specifically with the book of Proverbs and the book of kind of wisdom literature in general. And this is what I write about in my book, Following Jesus in a Digital Age, where I seek to kind of not only show people how technology, specifically social media, is forming us, but also what to do about it. That slowing down element can actually help to reorient, whether it's actually taking a Sabbath, taking a Sunday, not to actually utilize these things, to put down our phones for a while, to not always have it. I mean, I'll be honest, my phone is about 6 or 10 inches from me right now. I bet yours is as well, and most listeners as well. Our phones, we may even be watching or listening to this on our phone. We are constantly, constantly connected. What is that doing to us? How is that forming and shaping us? It always reminds me of Romans 12, verses 1 and 2, where Paul exhorts us. He says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. Paul is saying there, you are being conformed. Not a question of if. It's not a question of are you being shaped. It's not a question of are you being discipled and formed. It's how are you being discipled and formed, and what are these technologies doing? Not just technology, whether it's your news, whether it's your community, whether it's the various kind of interests and hobbies you have, you are being shaped and formed into a certain type of person. But as Christians, we're to slow down and to let the Spirit transform us, to renew our mind and our spirit. And part of that is slowing down. Part of that is prioritizing the local embodiment, the local church itself, of gathering together with the people of God. And then to start to realize that maybe I don't need certain aspects. Maybe I don't need certain social media apps for myself. I've kind of weaned myself off of certain types of technology, certain types of social media, but I've also put in other limits of downtime. My phone automatically, it's actually my wife's control, so I don't get to override it when I want. But actually at about 8:15 every night, my phone goes dark, essentially. I can make phone calls and look at email, but that's basically it. I can't access social media till 7:30 in the morning. There are other times where I'm limited to about an hour or so a day. The average American today spends a little over 2 hours, 2.5 hours on social media. I said, that's way too much. I want to slow that down. I want to bring that back to about an hour, actually, each day. And that still seems like a lot. It seems very excessive. But one of the things we have to realize is that we are constantly and completely and inundated by these technologies, constantly connected. And so seeking to kind of cultivate wisdom and discernment looks different for every single person.